Hi guys, welcome back to my channel. If you don't know me, I'm Sema. I'm a full-time pet portrait artist who loves coloured pencil. I've got a bunch of questions from you guys from Instagram, so we're going to do a bit of Q&A today where I open up about my real pet portrait business and lift the lid on what it's really like being an artist. I'm going to show you a whole bunch of my drawings as I chat, which you can also get as tutorials. Just follow the link below. The first question is from Jessica. So Jessica said, how did you actually learn to draw animals so realistically? Did you study or just practice a lot? Well, I guess the short answer is I practiced a lot. I've been drawing since forever. I love animals. But I think the skills to build here, especially if you want to be a pet portrait artist, is to build your copying skills, is to sort of be able to look at a picture and translate what you're seeing to what you're drawing. And so it doesn't really matter what you're copying. You could be copying animals or illustrations or people. I used to copy pictures on album covers, you know, Winnie the Pooh stickers, all types of things. I would constantly copy. And I think building that skill has helped me more to draw pet portraits than anything else that I've practiced in my life. So building that skill of knowing what you see and how to translate that is probably way more important than learning how to specifically draw animals themselves. So Sarah's asked, what's the hardest part of drawing fur and how do you get it to look so soft and real? So when it comes to drawing fur, I really like to think about how it grows, how it feels, what it looks like on the animal. So when I'm drawing fur, I do kind of draw every hair. I look at how it's growing out, you know, from the skin and then curving or flicking or really looking and focusing on the movement of the hair. That's also my favourite part. I love those details, looking at that soft movement of hair growing and flicking. It's so different on different parts of the animal as well. So if you can get that right and focus on, you know, on the nose, it's quite short and studded and doesn't really flick out very much. On the ears, it's very flicky and very like stray hair, like it curves round, it goes over the whole of the ear, like it's very different from the nose. And then you've got around the neck, like depending on whether it's a cat or a dog, anything like that, they normally do have longer neck hair, don't they? So that also creates a different movement of the hair. So just look at the animal and look at the different ways the hair moves and grows, and that's how it can look soft and real, definitely. And probably the hardest part, I guess, could be colour picking, because images are so different and you're almost not trying to copy the photograph in a weird sense. You're trying to copy the person's pet. So a photograph is like an instant in time. It depends on the lighting, if it's indoors, if it's outdoors, like it's got so many different dependencies that might not necessarily capture that pet perfectly. So you're also not only thinking about the colour that it looks like in the picture, but also if they sent you any other photos to go along with, and like, you know, if it's a black dog, what kind of black is that? Is like a purpley black or bluey black or like a velvety browny black? Like there's so many different kinds of blacks. You're not just thinking about the colour you see, you're trying to think about the pet itself. So that's probably the hardest part, is the colour picking. So Emily said, do you trace your outlines or draw freehand? Is tracing really that bad? So I personally use a light box for all of my commissions. I just have to. Mostly because it saves me time. Like when you've got commission after commission, you can't be spending too much time on trying to get the proportions right and the outlines, and because those things don't necessarily matter. Like the clients commissioned you to draw their pet in, say, colour pencil. That's what I'm doing. So I need to focus on the colour pencil. I need to get those colours right. I need to make it look soft and make it look accurate in that sense, rather than worrying too much about the proportions. I can freehand, I like to practice freehand in my spare time, but specifically for my job, I don't freehand just because it just takes too long. And tracing is just a tool, like everyone should use the tools that are available to them. It's not a bad thing at all. And it's still a skill you have to build. Like, it doesn't mean that it makes everything easier if you trace it. You still have to learn what to look for, what to trace, what not to trace. And think about those things when you're also copying the picture. So when I'm tracing with my light box, I like to have my piece of paper underneath, my drawing paper over the top, and I also have a tablet next to me with the actual reference picture on it, and then I can refer back to actually see what I'm tracing. So I'm doing sort of both at the same time, freehanding and tracing, to make sure I'm tracing the right parts in the right places, because you sort of lose that translation as the light's trying to shine through the picture. So it's a skill to build, it's not a bad thing to trace at all. So Lauren's asked, how long does a typical pet portrait take you from start to finish? Well, this is such a huge question because obviously it depends on the size and number of subjects and all that kind of thing. But basically, I guess my smallest commissioned size is A5, and that can take me anywhere from like 6 hours to 12 hours. It really depends on the type of pet it is. So say a tabby cat would take way longer than a black cat, because black cats don't have all of those stripes and things to consider and draw in and like so much more colour as well than a tabby cat has. So it really does depend on the portrait. But then things like, you know, an A2 with 8 subjects can take me an entire month. So it really does depend. And it also depends on how you are with your medium as well. Like, I've definitely got faster as the years have gone on. So when I first started my pet portraits 9 years ago, I did take 12 hours on a portrait that would now take me only 6 hours. I've definitely developed a skill in terms of knowing what I need to use, what to put down, just faster at applying the colour as well, and I definitely see that through the years. I've developed my skill of getting faster to be able to get more commissions in. So Amanda's asking, do you ever mess up a portrait halfway through, and what do you do if that happens? So funny enough, sometimes when I take a long break over Christmas, I always feel like I never know how to draw again because I haven't been drawing for like 4 weeks. So I think it was like my second year of being a full-time pet portrait artist. I was drawing this tabby cat and it just kept going wrong. I kept burnishing my paper, which is when you can't add any more colour pencil layers to the paper. It just won't take the colour. I made a hole in it and it just went awful. So I started it again. About 3 times I did this until I finally sort of got the swing of things back again. So it does happen, and I think that's okay. It's important to realise, I guess, when you have messed up, and because it's for a client, you want to give them your best work. If you think of your pet portrait commissions as you're only as good as your last commission, then make sure that it is as good as it can be, and don't be afraid of starting again. I wouldn't say to start again every time, because then you are kind of just wasting your own time. If you feel like you need to practice little studies or little sections before starting the full portrait, then do that. But I think it's okay if you do mess up. Like, really don't worry about that. Just start again and go from there, and don't worry about being bad sometimes. So Ashley's asking, what's your most emotional or memorable pet portrait story? I've had so many over the years. I've done over 300 commissions now, so it's really hard to pick like one emotional or one memorable. There's a few that I remember in different ways. So one of them was, this woman asked me to draw her black cat covered in cobwebs, and I thought that was such a weird picture, and like, you know, not showing the cat at its best kind of thing. But it was such a lovely story of her cat, like, helping her clean out under her basement or something. And she just thought it was so funny when he popped his head up covered in cobwebs that she had to take a picture of it. And that instant is, like, the memory she wanted to capture. So I guess the story behind the image made it way more memorable and more fun to actually create in the end. It was a really fun portrait to do. Another one, probably the hardest portrait I've ever done, is when I had to draw a man with his two dogs, and they were all separate images. So I had the man and I had two dogs in separate images, and the background was separate too. So that's memorable in a sense that it was really hard to, like, Photoshop and, you know, put together for the client to agree to it and then to actually draw it, because even when you Photoshop it, you don't know if it's actually going to come out right, or the lighting is different in every image and you've got to sort of adjust that lighting as you're drawing. So I think that was memorable in a way that it really challenged me as an artist, and I really enjoyed it, and now it's one of my proudest pieces. So I think it can surprise you, the kinds of commissions you get, and you never really know which ones are going to be the ones that you really remember, like, every instance of creating. So Rachel's asking, do clients ever cry when they get their portrait? And that must feel amazing. Okay, so yes. I think they always say they cry. Like, I never really get to see it, unfortunately. I think I've seen it like twice. But because all of my commissions come from overseas, they just send me an email saying, oh my god, I'm crying. Like, you've really captured them. And that's wonderful. It really does make me feel amazing, and I love them telling me how they feel because I can't see it. It would be nicer to see more of it. Like, I do really love it when my clients send me a video of, like, their partner opening the gift that they've given them of the pet portrait and they're, like, crying. That's really lovely to see because I don't actually get to see that normally. So that's really lovely. It does feel amazing. That is sort of like the best part of the job, to make someone feel so happy that they cry. It's quite a funny and weird thing to say, but that's definitely the best part of the job. So Megan's asking, have you ever had to say no to a commission? And if so, why? So in my 9 years of doing commissions, I think I've only ever said no once, and that was because the picture was just impossible. It was a woman, I remember, and she had a very old photograph of her childhood cat, so it wasn't even like a digital copy, it was a very old photo, which meant that it was terrible quality, and it was a black cat in a dark room, and I could barely see anything. I couldn't even see, like, where its eyes were. It was all, like, reflected, you know, in, like, a bad photo flash way. And I just said, I'm so sorry, like, I would love to draw your cat, but I can't see anything. I can't even see the outline of your cat. This photo is too hard to work from, basically. And she was like, you know, I understand. It was the only picture she had of her cat. So I still think about it today because it was the only one that I've ever said no to. And I wish I could have done something. Even now I think, could I have done it now? Like, if she asked me now? And I think maybe I could do it if I compiled a few other pictures together, like from Google, say, of other black cats, and try and sort of figure out the pose. But it wouldn't be the same because I wouldn't be copying her cat because I could barely see it in the picture. But that's probably what I would offer now. So Samantha asks, what do you do if a client doesn't like the final portrait? Has that ever happened? So that's a really good question, actually. That has happened only once, which I think is a very, very good record for, you know, one out of 300 commissions. So that happened very early on. It was my first year being full-time, and it was my fault. It was a miscommunication, basically. So she'd sent me a picture of her dog, but the legs were cut off, and she wanted the legs on. And she sent me other reference images with, like, you know, what the dog's legs looked like. It was a schnauzer. And I said, okay, yeah, sure, I can do that. But I didn't know much about, like, proportions and things like that at the time. I think it was the first ever schnauzer that I did. So I drew it, but obviously the legs were slightly too short, I guess. And it was a bit of a weird angle. The camera was sort of pointed down, so the legs would be slightly shortened, if you get what I mean. But when she saw it, like, I'd finished it, she saw it, she was like, oh no, like, that doesn't look right. She was really upset. Because I'd sort of been giving her pictures throughout as well, but obviously the legs are like the last thing that you do. So she'd been so happy up until I finished the legs. So I said, you know, I didn't give her a mock-up. That was my first issue. I should have given her a mock-up to approve. And if she had approved the mock-up, then I drew it. I wouldn't have had this issue. But I didn't give her a mock-up. I just said I'd do it. Which is why I then said to her, you know, I'm so sorry, it's my fault, can I draw this image instead? And I chose another picture from the collection of images that she gave me, and she said, yeah, okay, you draw that one. So I drew that one, and she was just so much happy with it, and I didn't have to, like, make any corrections to that one. It was just the full body of the dog, so I didn't need to, like, do any weird additions to it. So that's what I did. I did it for free, and that's the first and only time I've ever had to do it. And since then, I always get people to approve the mock-up first and say, this is what it's gonna look like. If you wanna make any corrections, let me know now. And that's just so helpful and has saved me a lot of pain throughout my career. So that has never happened again, thankfully. So now Nicole is asking, what's the strangest or most unexpected animal you've ever been asked to draw? Funny enough, recently, it was last year, that's pretty recent, I was asked to draw somebody's possum. Really cute. It was their neighbourhood possum and their baby that came to visit them every day. They fed it and everything, and it was just so cute. And I'd never really drawn anything that, and like an animal really, that wasn't someone's pet before. So I guess it's sort of their pet, but it was a wild possum. That was a really fun opportunity. I really enjoyed doing that. So that's definitely my most unexpected animal that I've drawn. So Danielle's asked, when did you know you could actually make a living doing this? I probably didn't know until a year in. After I quit my job and I'd been doing it for a year. Up until then, it felt like every day was a rush to get new sales, to make sure I was okay, to pay bills and all that kind of thing. And because it was my first year of sales, I didn't know where, like, the highs and lows were of the year. I didn't understand about, like, people are more likely to buy in the autumn, less likely to buy in the summer because they're all on holiday, that kind of thing. So after that full year of understanding people's buying habits and when they bought, that really gave me the knowledge to feel like, yes, I can do this. I can predict my sales. I can sort myself out financially and actually live off this. And it was very liberating and also very scary, because I guess even now I still feel like, oh my gosh, am I living off it? But I am. So, but yeah, it's just one of those things that you sort of, when you're in it, it's hard to know that you're already doing it. But yeah, my first year, I definitely started to feel that way. So Brittany said, how did you get your very first paying client? That was actually through a friend, an old school friend. So unfortunately, her cat had passed away. It was hit by a car very suddenly, and she really loved it. And she knew me from school, so she knows that I love art and drawing. I wasn't an artist specifically back then. I was still doing my engineering. So she'd asked me, can you draw my cat? I really miss him. I really want a portrait of him, and I'll pay you. And I was never going to, like, ask her for payment. I would have just said yes anyway, because she was asking me. And up until then, I'd always done drawings as gifts. So for wedding gifts, birthday gifts, Christmas gifts, I'd draw people or their pets as gifts. And so when she said, I'll pay you, I was like, oh my gosh, someone's actually gonna pay me for my work. So obviously I agreed, and it was such a nerve-wracking experience when someone says that they're actually gonna give you money, because I feel like when you're doing it as a gift, so it's free, there's way less pressure, because they're not I guess they're not giving you any sort of commitment. You're the only one giving commitment. It's your time, it's your effort. All they have to do is receive it. But when they're giving you money as a commitment, to show commitment for the piece, you definitely feel like you've got to get it right. Like, it has to look like their pet. It's got to look nice. That was the first time, like, I got a mount. I didn't even know what a mount was up until that point. But I got a mount, I got a bow, and I tried to present it, you know, as nicely as I could. But, you know, I made the amateur mistakes of drawing it on printer paper with terrible pencils, but it still came out nice. And she was really happy with it. She even cried, and it was really awkward as well, because I didn't want to ask for the money. I didn't want to be like, so are you paying me, kind of thing. I just left it and waited for her to say something. And she was like, oh my God, yeah, here you go. Here's the £50. And I was like, oh, thank goodness you initiated that, because I just had no idea what to say. It's always so awkward. I feel like it would be awkward with a stranger, let alone a friend. So I guess that was my first experience. And it sort of set the pace, I guess, for my business itself, which is very exciting when you look back on it. So Melissa's asking, do you still take commissions, or is most of your income now from teaching? So this year specifically, I have stopped taking commissions just because I need more time to teach. But up until this year, literally, this is the first year ever I haven't had a commission to do in 9 years, and it's such a weird and terrifying feeling, because up until this point I've always been booked up by like 4 to 6 months at least, and it's been very weird not to take on anymore, and I guess kind of scary as well, because I've had that reliability, like I know, okay, I've got this one next and this one next and this one next, and to finally get to the point where I don't have any next because I've chosen that, it's a very weird feeling. I'm definitely going to take on some more when I've sort of finished back creating some tutorials and helped some more students. But I think until then, I get the chance to try new things. And that's also really fun and exciting. So I'm not too worried that I'm not taking on commissions right now, because I have a lot of other projects to do. But it's not something that I'm never going to do again. I'm definitely going to take on more commissions when I have the time, because I just love it. I love taking commissions. I love making people happy. I love the experience of doing new things and meeting new people, and I guess making friends overseas, that kind of thing. So I'm never going to stop it. Definitely know that. I'm just taking a break to try a new thing. So Jennifer asks, do you ever feel burnout from constantly drawing for other people? Definitely at the start, I was getting very burnt out, because I was taking on commissions at a very low price, which meant I sold a lot. I think the first 2 months of my business, I was booked up like 8 months. So I had 8 months of commissions ahead of me, and I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? Like, how do I take on more if I've got this many commissions to do in the first place? So that sort of was quite daunting at the time, and because I wasn't charging enough, I was getting burnt out from doing one after the other, especially towards Christmas time. I remember 1 year, I literally had to do a whole A4 one in 1 day, like from start to finish, because if I didn't do that, I would run out of time. There wouldn't be enough time to ship it to the customer for Christmas. And I was so exhausted. I stayed up till past midnight trying to finish this cat. It turned out really well. It's actually one of my favourite early pieces. But it was like, I never put myself in that position again. I learned from that. I took on commissions early for Christmas. I stopped commissions early for Christmas and always told people, no, sorry, I'm fully booked for Christmas, but you can commission me in the new year, kind of thing. And I was really like, I stood by that a lot and made sure that I didn't burn myself out when it came to that again. And even now, being a new mum, I spaced out my commissions a lot so I didn't get burnout and I didn't worry about deadlines. So I basically spaced it out so I only had to complete one commission a month, and that really helped me to not burn out and enjoy the commission when I'm doing it and not worry that I'm not going to hit my deadlines, because that's really important. So Heather's asking, what advice would you give to someone who wants to start taking pet portrait commissions? My advice would be to start with friends and family, asking them, even if you're doing it at, like, you know, a very low price that doesn't even cover your pencils. It's just learning about that exchange, about asking for money, getting them to pay for something. Because I feel like that's the hardest thing to sort of learn and get used to as an artist. So even if you say to your mum, can you pay me to draw our pet dog? It can be just £5 kind of thing. It's just learning about asking for that money, them giving you that money, and then you creating something for them. So it doesn't necessarily matter, like, you know, the actual price at this stage. It's more about practicing. I think you should get as many examples under your belt as soon as you can, especially if you're not able to get customers that are outside of your inner circle. You want to be able to eventually show, yes, I can draw a Dalmatian, here are some examples. Yes, I can draw your Schnauzer, here are some examples. That's the best way to communicate with customers who have no idea who you are. If you can show that you can turn up, you can answer questions quickly, you can show them examples so they know exactly what they're going to get, they're going to commission you because they feel like you're the professional, you're the one to ask. And you're going to deliver what they need. So if you can be that person by practicing on your friends and family, then that's the first thing that you need to do. So Emily's asking, how did you grow your audience online? Was there a moment where things took off? So in terms of growing my audience, with Instagram, it was a very slow and steady pace. Nothing ever went viral. It just all grew as one. Every time I posted, I got a few more likes than I did before, a few more comments than I did before, that kind of thing. But with Facebook, I did actually have a few posts that sort of went viral. So I would share it to groups. I love sharing to groups. It's a great way to get to know new people and to show them your artwork and make new friends, because that's what you're supposed to do on social media, is to socialize. And then a few of my posts from there would suddenly get like 27 shares that I didn't do. You know, someone else would share it and then they would share it and then they would share it. And that's quite a cool feeling of this, you know, seeing this stream of people sharing your Facebook posts. So I did go viral a few times on Facebook. That's how I managed to build that following. But it never really happened with other social medias. It was more just like, keep going, keep being consistent, keep posting, and thinking about what you want to say, why you want to post, what you're trying to achieve by your posts. So that's how I sort of grew my social media as it stands. So Natalie's asking, what should artists post on Instagram if they feel like they're not good enough yet? I would say just post it anyway, because your definition of not good enough is very different to other people's definition of not good enough. So if you're sort of like setting the bar for yourself of you're not as good as this person, you're never sort of gonna like show yourself and share your work and let people see what you're capable of. But if you just post it and see what happens, see what people like about it, get the feedback early on, you won't know how to progress, you won't know how to get better, and you won't know what kinds of feedback that you would get from people. So if I had posted the first cat, if I hadn't posted the first cat that I ever drew, like, I didn't think it was amazing, but it was the best that I could do at the time with the materials that I had. If I hadn't posted that on Facebook, I never would be here today. That cat is the one that gave me this opportunity, that gave me my business and my livelihood. But comparing it to the kind of artist I am today, it's not the same at all. Like, I am so much better. My colours are more vibrant. Like, my proportions are better. Like, everything about my drawings are better. But if I had waited till now to start posting on Instagram, I wouldn't be here today. I wouldn't be a full-time artist with all this experience under my belt. I wouldn't have 300 commissions to talk about. So I think just do it. now, it doesn't matter about whether you feel good enough, because you're not the one that has to decide that. It's your customers that have to decide whether you're good enough to pay for, not you. So Christine is asking, do you ever feel pressure to be on all the time with your audience? I guess yes. I do like to sort of separate professional and personal. I guess I talk a little bit personally, like, you know, I have a child kind of thing, but I like to keep my life separate. So I do feel like as a professional, I want to be seen as a professional. So I do want to feel switched on. I do want to feel ready to answer questions, to do things, to sound like I know what I'm doing when a client asks me specific questions about a commission. And I guess it can be tiring, but I prefer that. I like the look of that. I like to know that they can trust me because I am showing them my professional side. I don't necessarily like to talk too much about my personal life or show too much about my personal life because it's personal, you know, it's my life that I do behind closed doors. And I think that separation is healthy. I think it's good for you to, you know, have your work life and your home life. You don't need to talk about everything, especially on social media. We don't need to know what you ate for dinner or if you cook or don't like to cook kind of thing. It's kind of irrelevant if you're trying to get a pet portrait customer. I think if you're trying to get pet portrait customers, just talk about pet portraits and drawing dogs and loving animals and everything that surrounds that subject matter. You don't actually have to talk about anything else because that's irrelevant. So Katie says, what do people assume about being a full-time artist? That's totally wrong. Well, funny enough, not totally wrong, but quite wrong. When people say, oh, you must, you know, draw all day and that must be so lovely. Being a full-time artist doesn't really consist of drawing all day. Like, I wish it did. But because you're running the business yourself, you've got to do everything else. Like all the admin stuff, the social media stuff, the marketing, building your website, socializing with people, talking to people, even creating mock-ups when you get the client. You know, your taxes, all that stuff has to happen. And unless you're so successful that you can hire people to do those things for you, you've got to do them. And especially when you're a small business owner, you do have to wear many hats. And so really, I draw for, say, I don't know, maybe 50% of the time, maybe a bit less than that. And all the rest of it is what I spend most of my time doing. So it's not as glamorous as it sounds. But I do enjoy it. I love every aspect of running a business. I'm obsessed with it. So that works out. So Elizabeth is asking, do you ever compare yourself to other artists and how do you deal with it? The short answer is yes. I compare myself all the time. You know, not even just about art specifically, but like, oh, they've got a better business than me or better packing than me, or, you know, they've got more clients than me or whatever. Like I compare every aspect and I know I shouldn't, and I tell people that they shouldn't too, but it's hard to do, isn't it? Like, honestly, you do compare yourself, but I sort of see it as fuel to make me better, I guess. So when I see that someone's got like a beautiful certificate of authenticity, I think, okay, how can I make mine better? Like, I don't want to copy theirs. I don't want to be them. I want to actually be better than them. If someone's drawn a beautiful pet portrait with colour pencil and I just think it's the most stunning thing I've ever seen, I don't think, oh no, I'll never be that good. I think, okay, so what have they done differently and how can I approach that? How can I learn from them and how can I do mine better or better than them? That's sort of how I see it. I get quite competitive sometimes, to be honest, and that's how I've always seen, I guess, competition. It's not necessarily competition for like more clients. It's more like competition in terms of like, I want to be a better artist than that person, or I want to have a better packaging style than that person, or a better website than that person. Sometimes I get obsessed with my website and I want my website to be the most beautiful website anyone's ever seen, which I know doesn't necessarily matter, but it matters to me. So I do think it's probably one of my flaws, but it has made me a better, I guess, strategist, and that whole thing of trying to be better, like I'm always trying to be a better artist as well. Like I'm doing all these practice journals now and practicing my actual skills, and from there I've learned that I love color mixing. So I never really did that before, so I'm already learning new things. You know, I've been drawing for 9 years and I've never done color mixing until now, and that's actually my favorite thing to do. So someone asked me the other day, are you going to do that in your commissions? And I was like, yeah, I probably will try. So I think it pushes you when you see people that are better than you. You should use it as fuel to push you to be better, rather than making it feel bad about yourself. You don't want to do that. So yeah, just use it as fuel, and know that you can be whatever you want to be. You don't have to be the same as someone. You can be the better version of you as well. So always look back at your own progress as an artist and remind yourself of where you've come from and where you are now, because everybody is on their own journey. Some people have been drawing for 50 years. Some people have been drawing for 5 years. Everyone is doing their own thing. So you really can't compare and feel down about something that you don't actually have any control over. So really just think about your own journey in that respect. So I hope you found these questions useful. If you do have any other questions, put them in the comments below and I'll be happy to answer them.